Together with American Songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Jillette Johnson over Zoom video. Jillette talks about where she grew up and how she got into music. She started playing music at a very, very early age, started playing piano around 5, and started writing songs and showing them to people at 8. At 12 years old, she was already going to New York City and playing gigs at legitimate venues. She talked about putting out her first couple albums, getting signed to Wind Up Records, her first touring experiences, moving to Nashville, and her brand new record, It's a Beautiful Day, and I Love You. You can watch the interview with Jillette Johnson and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Jillette Johnson. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So our podcast is on your journey in music and how you got to where you are now. And we'll talk about your new song and the record coming out as well.
Awesome.
Sweet. I did read you're from New York. Were you born and raised in New York City?
No. Okay. I was born in San Francisco, California.
Oh, very cool.
Pretty far away from San Diego. From New York.
Yeah, that's far.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh man, so you're in warm weather.
It's not I mean, it poured last night actually. But it's
like
not
the one time a year that happens.
Yeah. Well, we had hail the other day, which is really bizarre.
Wow.
So, I mean, but it's still like, you know, 60, 70 outside. It's not freezing.
Yeah. I don't feel sorry for you at all.
Yeah, exactly. Are you in New York now?
No, I'm in Nashville. It is pretty cold here.
We're moving to Nashville in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah. Like we've been packing the house up. Like, you know, you can't see here cause I left this kind of nice, but like out this way, it's just like mayhem. So.
Oh, well, I'm excited for you to experience the, terrible cold that's happening right now.
Sure. Whereabouts in Nashville are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm in Englewood, which is basically East Nashville.
Very cool. Right on.
So, where are you guys coming to?
Like Franklin area.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So the idea is we're going to build a studio there. So once everything opens up again and people are vaccinated and safe, we can do these interviews there instead of over the computer.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. So when your record comes out, we can do this in person next time.
Yeah, I'm down. I'd love to do anything in person once.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right. So you were born in San Francisco. How long did you live there?
Well, we lived in a suburb of San Francisco in the Bay Area until I was 9.
Okay.
And then we moved to New York, but we moved to the suburbs. To a suburb of New York City, which was about an hour away. And then I started commuting into the city for music purposes when I was pretty young. That started when I was like 12 or 13.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And then I moved in when I was 18. I went to NYU for basically half a semester. And then
that's huge, though.
Dropped out. But I stayed in New York City for like 8 years.
Wow.
Then, yeah.
How did you get into music?
I don't know. It happened so young that it just I just don't remember a time when I wasn't constantly thinking about music or singing or writing songs in my head. So I attribute it to my dad, who liked to sing to me. Like, he would sing my children's books to me instead of just read them. Like, he would turn everything into a song.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Was he an artist at all, or just enjoyed doing that?
He just enjoyed doing it. I mean, he loved art and music, and he was in community theater when he was in his, like, I don't know, 20s.
That's
maybe
cool.
30s.
Yeah.
And he sung in an a cappella choir in college, but he never like turned it into more than that. And I think both my parents have always been really supportive of me being in music. And I think that sort of is like maybe a living vicariously through thing.
Sure. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. So what was the first instrument you learned and how old were you?
Piano. Mm-hmm. And I think I was either 5 or 6. I'm fuzzy on exactly the date.
So your parents just put you in lessons, or are you curious, or how'd that work?
So the story that I have in my head is that my mom said, both my kids have to take 5 years of piano lessons and then they can do whatever they want, just because I think that piano is a really helpful tool if you want to be musical or whatever. She says that she said that, but she made my brother do it, and she wasn't going to make me do it until I was older, but I wanted to do everything that my brother did.
Sure.
So I was like, why aren't I in piano lessons? And I was terrible. I was really for a long time.
Well, with your brother doing it, does he still play?
He doesn't, no. Yeah, my brother, he was a really talented piano player. And then he got really interested in the drums. And okay. he became the school marimba player and was very, very talented at that. And he played like kit in a couple high school bands.
Wow.
And then he decided when he was like, I think he was like 13, he decided he really wanted to go to West Point, which is the military,
yeah, military
academy.
School. Wow.
And that was his mission, and he did it. He got in, and he went to West Point, and he was enlisted. I mean, he was in the Army for a good amount of years after and deployed a
wow.
couple times, once to Iraq, once to Afghanistan. And I think his music, the music side of his life kind of was overtaken by the interest in the military. Yeah.
Did you ever jam together? Were you ever with him in his bands or anything, or no?
I wanted to be so bad. Every now and then they would let me like sit down in the basement and watch them.
All right, you can sit, but you cannot do anything.
Yeah, well, and I had a crush on all his friends too. So
of course,
he's like 4 years older than me, and I was always like very precocious. so once or twice, my brother and I like played together, but I don't think that he thought that was very cool. And then when he went to West Point, he actually joined a band, and we all went up as a family to watch the band play, and they let me get on stage and sing a song, and it was
very
fun.
Cool. That is yeah. rad. Right yeah. on. That's cool. So yeah. you started piano at 5. What would, like, when did you start writing songs?
I was about 8 when I started showing people that I was writing songs.
8. Wow.
Yeah, I was really young. It just happened. Like, I just always thought that that was the right thing to do, is to write a song.
That's amazing. At 8, you started showing people. So your parents, or you were going out and like legitimately playing?
Well, the first person I showed was my voice teacher. I begged my parents to let me take voice lessons when I was 7. And she was really, she was a wonderful mentor for me. Like mm-hmm. I started telling her that I was making these songs, and like I would show her my journal entries, and then she was really encouraging and really wanted to hear them. And that kind of gave me the confidence to then show my parents. And then at some point, I think I was like, it took a while, but I was like 11 when I recorded my first demos, like
wow.
in a studio. And then I
was
started
that exciting?
Playing. So exciting. Yeah. I mean, thrilling. You're in yeah. You get to hear your own voice really loud. And then
was
all of a sudden
was that strange
sounds...
for the first time? You're like, whoa. I know a lot of people, like, they when they first put on headphones and listen to themselves, they're like so weirded out.
I think I was really obsessed with it. I think I thought I was really hot shit.
That's amazing. Right on. So that's cool. Do you have that demo still or no?
My mom does. She yeah. always threatens that she's gonna like bring all of my old demos from their house in New York. No, she just wants to put them in my house because they're like,
she's like, there's all this stuff here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, her whole thing is she's like convinced that I'm gonna discover some amazing like jewel of a song and all of this body of work from my childhood. And I don't think that's going to happen, but it's a
you
sweet
never know.
Fantasy.
You never know.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, okay. That's super young. 11, you started showing people. Were you playing? Like, how did you get shows? Like, I did read that you started playing like in New York City, like really young.
Yeah. My first show in New York was, I was 12. I started playing at the Sidewalk Cafe in Alphabet City.
And how did you get that? Just sending a demo?
Well, no, it's a long, I mean, this is a long journey. So I, at about 12, my parents read in the newspaper, there was this like ad for children musicians from
Okay.
this management company that like wanted to manage kids, and that sounds really sketchy.
Sure, a little bit.
Yeah,
But they could be
but
looking for the next like Britney Spears or something. You never know.
totally. Well, actually, this pair of women had been involved in like the Backstreet Boys to some capacity. Who knows
Oh, right on.
how
Okay.
involved they really were, but
At least it was women that were searching these out. I mean, that probably made it a little safer, right?
Yeah, that
Okay.
helped. So we met with these women who really wanted to represent me. They really wanted to be my managers. So
Wow.
they introduced me to my first lawyer, whose name was Howard Sadowski, and he was like a big shot New York lawyer. And Howard introduced me to this guy named Jason Silberman, who worked at ASCAP, who still works, I think, at ASCAP, but he's like,
Wow.
I've known him since I was 12, and he's still in the music industry. It's amazing.
That's crazy.
And Jason, I think, is the one who got me my first gig in New York.
Okay. And
Yeah.
so you started playing at the sidewalk cafe?
The Sidewalk Cafe. And then I was also, like, about a year after my first show in New York City, I started playing at this jazz club in the town over from where I lived every week. And I
Oh,
played,
wow.
like, a couple hours of just original
Covers or
songs. Nope,
originals.
I didn't play
Wow.
any covers.
That's awesome that they let you do that,
I know,
especially for 2 hours. Oh my gosh.
I can't believe that people sat through that, 'cause it was like, also a restaurant. So people were just going there to eat, and they had no idea that a 13-year-old girl was going to be like
Play.
angstily banging on the piano next to them
Well, I'm
for
sure.
2 hours.
Yeah. Well, at least it's a piano. I'm sure that kind of helped a little bit and didn't go in there, because piano is just more of a soothing instrument if you're eating, I feel like. I don't
I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on how you're playing it. I think
know. You're rocking
I was a really
it.
aggressive piano player. It took
Okay.
me many years to have a little more finesse. Like, I was really emotional as a piano player, and that meant like hitting the keys pretty hard. I
Okay.
remember like when I was around that age, my parents dragged me to some like party of their friends, and there was a piano, and like what usually happens when kids are like, performers is the parents always ask them to play for
Yeah.
everybody. And I was
She get up and
more than down.
play.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at
She's
least
here
you're
to be entertainment.
good.
That, I mean, who knows what I sounded like back then. But I remember after I played for this group of strangers, this man went up to me. He's like, "You know what I like about you? You're not afraid of the piano." Like, he meant that I was like bashing the
Yeah,
piano keys.
exactly.
Yeah.
That's funny. So, what was the next step up for you after, you're as that young, like how do you keep progressing in your career?
I mean, I think it's just a story of continuing to push forward. And
Okay.
it's been the story of my career, and I think of most people's careers, for my whole life, which is that you start working with some people, you work as hard as you can, and then sometimes those chapters lead to a new chapter with those people. Sometimes those chapters end and you meet new people. And basically, I just kept networking and playing more shows and learning how to write as much as I could and become the best artist that I could. And it eventually led me to getting a record deal when I was in my early 20s. I had showcased for a lot of record labels over the course of that time. And, I wasn't ready for any of that, which is why it's pretty great that I didn't get signed, because I didn't yet have the clarity of artistry that I started to have in my early 20s.
Okay. So you're showcasing prior to being, in your 20s, what you were like younger, 18, 19 or something like that, prior to that.
I started showcasing for real labels when I was 12.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, how
Yeah.
are those showcases? Were you nervous or at that point you're just like, you didn't really understand what that meant.
I understood what it meant, but I was really confident. And I
Okay.
think as I've gotten older, pressure has felt harder to handle. When I was
Oh,
a
okay.
kid, it was more like you just don't. I think fear is not really as much of a thing. I mean, you think about how kids are in general, they're just like, if
Fearless.
something's exciting to
Right,
them, they just go for it and
right.
don't really worry about the consequences. And so I
Sure.
was just I think full of confidence, and that was part of why I was given a lot of opportunities, I think, because I wasn't shy and I was self-possessed from a young age.
Wow.
And now I'm like, man, how do I, how, I gotta fi I mean, I figure it out, but it takes some real centering to get back to my like 12-year-old
Right.
self.
Sure. Well, you said you got signed in your early 20s. Was that how did that happen? Was another showcase, or did you have a demo that you were sending around?
So the producer of my first record, Peter Zizzo, I had met when I was supposed to be or was on my way to signing a record deal with Epic Records when I was 17.
Okay.
And what happened with Epic is, as I was being signed, Rick Rubin took over and cleaned house of all the A&R guys, and the A&R guy who was signing me got fired and blah, 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 blah. But and there's a lot of those on the
Sure.
way. So Peter was a person who is known at that time as a songwriter. He's also a producer now, but he was predominantly a songwriter. And that was a time in my life where I was open to people telling me to go and write with a bunch of people and
Okay.
to send songs to this label so that they could find the hit. That's not really how I operate anymore. But I was 17 and really excited to be talking to a major label.
Right, listening. What do you guys need me to do? Type thing, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So they flew me out to Los Angeles and I wrote with a ton of people, and the vibe pretty much was like I had one room with a couple other people in it, and they would already have a song written and kind of asked me to sing it. And that wasn't really how I wrote songs. I liked to
So they'd
actually
be
write
like,
them.
yeah, they would say, here's the song and here's the lyrics, and you just kind of had to be the voice.
Yeah, which, as a songwriter, I get that now. Like if there's a young kid walking into your studio and you're trying to get a song on their record potentially that has a major deal on it, you're not really going to leave. You're not going to assume that this kid knows how to write a song. You're just
Right.
going to assume that
Hope
this
that they're
kid.
gonna take it and make the cut on the record, right?
Yeah, you have to be as prepared as you can be. So the only person that didn't do that was Peter. And Peter and I wrote a song together that I really loved, and we had chemistry immediately. And what Peter did was he told me to stop writing with other people, including him. He was
Oh,
like,
interesting.
I think you have spent pretty much your whole life writing songs by yourself, and you've started to create this songwriting voice for yourself. And I think it's really important that you continue to hone that and craft it. And if you are writing with all of the songwriters that write for everybody else, you're vulnerable to sounding like other people.
Sure.
So that really helped me and inspired me and made me feel like I could trust Peter. So Peter became my friend and a bit of my mentor, and I would come to him and like bounce songs off of him. And we tried a couple times to like start making a record or find an investor or something, and it fizzled a couple of times. But then when I was like 21 or so, he invited me to come and actually write with him. He was writing for Pop. He was signed to Universal Publishing. And we wrote this pop song together and then looked at each other and we were like, what are we doing? Like, we should make my record. I'd just finished playing him like 10 new songs. And so we decided that we were going to make a record together and try to turn it into something real, try to get a record deal, try to get my career off the ground for real. Because I'd had, a decade of false starts and I felt really ready. So Peter got his friend Mike Mangini involved and they co-produced a demo. And we started shopping it. We didn't really aggressively shop it to major labels, but we started looking around to see if there were some cool independent labels that might be a good fit. And then Wind Up Records was the place.
That's they're a rad label too, because they used to, I mean, they still have great bands, but they've signed a bunch of cool bands back in, that eventually did major things, right?
Well, so they actually don't exist anymore.
Oh.
They were dissolved in 2016, 16.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because they had a bunch of big artists. OAR was on there and like Bayside, and they were just kind of all over the map as far as like that went.
Yeah, so they made a lot of their money and cut their teeth in active rock.
Yeah, they had a Drowning Pool and some of those other like rock, yeah, those rock bands, new metal, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, super. It was a very niche sound for the label, and I was very not that sound.
Right.
But the company had been in a huge transition. The owner of the company ended up taking his own life before I was involved. And,
oh my goodness!
So there was new leadership, yeah, and leadership. Ownership, and the new direction of the company was to go in this more like singer-songwriter indie place, and I was one of the first signings in that direction. So I was part of this new experiment, kind of.
That's awesome. Yeah, because they signed Five for Fighting and like a bunch of other like singer-songwriter type bands too.
Yeah, well, and they had like the Revivalists and God, who else? Civil Twilight. I mean, they came close to having some success in my era, but really it was a trying time for the label when I was there. There was a lot of shifting of hands and money, and it was a pretty tumultuous place to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I think their big success had been behind them, mm-hmm, with, because they had like Creed and Evanescence,
wow, yeah,
and Seether and Filter, and you know, these like massive radio active
rock bands.
So it was a big shift for them to come into this other genre, and I think it was kind of a confusing process for them. Mm-hmm. I'll say that. Yeah.
Sure. So they put out what, your first EP and your first record?
Yeah. And then I made my second record here in Nashville with Dave Cobb, and they were part of setting that all up. And I was still signed to them when I made that record, but they had been acquired by Concord Records.
Oh, okay.
And by the time I had finished making my record, about 4 months after I made my second record, they were dissolved by Concord. Oh. So I was then kind of inherited into this like Concord.
Concord. But
world.
Concord's huge too.
They are massive.
Yeah. So that's probably probably a big thing for you, right? Are you still with them?
No, I'm not. It was one of those things where it could have been a really wonderful thing, and it also was a really scary thing, because mm-hmm, I was all of a sudden in a world where I didn't know anybody. Like, all the people who had worked on my behalf and believed in me and signed me and, mm-hmm, you know, were emotionally invested were gone. And sure. The thing about a major company is there's money and power and infrastructure and all of that, which is fantastic. And Concord is a wonderful company. I mean, mm-hmm, a lot of really great humans work there, and they've participated in some amazing records. Mm-hmm. But you also can easily get lost if you're not in the right system there. So I was kind of inherited by Rounder. They put their hand up and said they wanted to put out my second record, which was great. Mm-hmm. But they were also going through a lot of changes. The president of Rounder left in the middle of my second album cycle, like the president of Wind Up left in my first album cycle.
Oh my gosh.
So it was honestly a tricky run there, mm-hmm, to be at labels at all. Like, I think the amount of ground moving underneath my feet throughout the tenure of my 10 years of being in a deal was just kind of unprecedented. Like, it just never stopped. So I made the decision that I was going to take the opportunity that was given to me by the person who became the president of Rounder, mm-hmm, after I made my second record, who happened to be my lawyer.
Oh, wow. It kind of worked out.
Yeah, so he gave me the gift of saying, we'd love to have you here. I know that your deal is really intimidating and probably not going to allow you to make a lot of money if you stay. So if you want to leave, I'm going to give you that option. And I took it. And here I am.
Very cool. So I want to go back just real quick to the first records with Windup. Did you get to tour on those albums at all? Or was it just put them out? Or like, I mean...
Yeah, I toured pretty extensively. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really wonderful. I had never been on tour before I started touring for my first record, and I got to see the country many tens of times over.
Yeah, that must have been, yeah, very exciting.
Very exciting. Oh, yeah. Like roll down the windows, wind in your hair, cornfields, mountains.
Sure. Very cool. Very
lots
cool.
of people.
It just started like pouring here in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you can hear it. It's like super loud.
Oh, I can't hear it. So okay, that might good. Mean we're okay. Yeah.
That is good. Awesome. Well, tell me about, so what would you say the highlight or milestone moment of the second record would be?
The milestone. Can you define milestone? What do you
like,
mean by
was
that?
There like, you know, did you get to play a certain show? Was there a big song or something that really meant a lot to you on that album?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that album was a really big artistic statement for me. I had made a really, big, super produced, fairly pop leaning record,
mm-hmm.
my first record. And, my second record was really the opposite of that.
Okay.
And it was me kind of wanting to show that there's a lot of sides to my artistry because I was getting frustrated. I look back and I really love my first record. And I think it stands the test of time. Mm-hmm. But when I was in that process and started touring, I often was either meeting people who loved that record, but assumed that that was what I was only, and they'd come and see me live and see me just play with my piano alone. And they'd be really confused because they'd be like, wait, you're these two different artists. I don't understand.
Sure.
And then sometimes I would meet these like cool, like bandy people mm-hmm. that just kind of, I was self-conscious around because I felt like having made a pop leaning record made me not as cool. And I really wanted to show that I had, like, I was making real music. And there was also this assumption that, like, I didn't write the songs on my first record. And I mm-hmm. just, I had it in my mind that I needed to show that what I come from is, like, Carole King, Tapestry,
sure.
like, Joni Mitchell, Randy Newman. And it was a really beautiful thing to be at that time, it was a very specific slice of time, to be able to say to the powers that be around me, like, this is exactly what I want to do, and for mm-hmm. everybody to really support that. And it helped me find my community here in Nashville. I moved to Nashville after I made that record, and I was able to, I think, kind of like define or take down the walls of like how people defined me artistically.
Sure.
And that felt important.
That sounds like a fantastic milestone to have.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So this is now we're up to like pretty much your new record, right? As far as releases go.
Yeah. Well, I don't know when this airs, but my new record technically comes out 2 weeks from today.
Oh, very cool. I'm sure we'll figure out when that is. That's a different side of things, but,
yeah.
I want to ask you where you were when coronavirus hit and how that affected you.
I was at my wedding in
Mexico.
Oh
my gosh. Congratulations on the wedding.
Thank you.
When did you get married in March?
So I got married February 29th.
Okay.
And coronavirus had been here, but it hadn't been, it wasn't like lockdown. So I was
sure.
technically in Nashville. I had been back in Nashville for a week when lockdown started. But when we landed back in Nashville, first of all, it was a few days after the tornado ran through Nashville.
Oh, wow.
And
completely dead there.
Oh, it's been really tough. Yeah.
I mean, you got the bombing and like all this crazy stuff is happening there.
Yeah. The tornado, I mean, we weren't here for it, but mm-hmm. it completely decimated a lot of Nashville, including the building that my husband worked out of.
My gosh.
Yeah. So that was already a wild ride. And when we were in Mexico, we knew about the coronavirus, but it wasn't something that we were that worried about. And mm-hmm. I do remember being on the plane coming home and getting a little bit nervous because people were really jammed together and some people were coughing around me. And I was kind of like, should I be worried about this? And right. it's so funny looking back on it, because if that had been a week later, I would have had a panic attack. Like,
sure. No way I'm getting in this plane.
God. But yeah, I mean, as far as this year goes, I'm going to count myself as incredibly lucky because I'm safe. Mm-hmm. I'm partnered, so I'm not like totally alone in this. Mm-hmm. I am in a house that I like, and we have a backyard, and we can put food on our table. So I think amazing. As far as stuff like that goes,
yeah, I love that you good. Said you're partnered, because I was thinking about that too when I talked to people. Like, I don't know what I'd do if I was by myself. You know, like, I'm married with kids. So it's like, if I had to sit in my house alone and not be able to leave, I would have been freaking out. I mean, I was freaking out as it was, but I mean, the people that are just stuck by themselves, like, I don't know. I just can't. I couldn't hang.
I know. I think about the times in my life when I have been single, and I've spent a good amount of my adulthood as a single person and really enjoyed it, but also been lonely.
Right.
Like, and that's okay. It's okay to be lonely. But I remember the depths of the loneliness at times was really painful. And so I think about that mm-hmm. with the pandemic. It's like all the stuff that you would do to try to offset the loneliness, you can't do.
Yeah. You can't go out, try to hang out with your friends, do anything. You're just like inside your house by yourself.
I know. I really feel for people who are going through that right now.
Yeah, it's awful. Well, I'm glad you made it back. I mean, you made it like right under the, you know, rope there, kind of. So I don't know what the expression would be, but you made it right there. And like, thank God. So now that you're inside, was that when you started writing this record, or these songs that you had recorded and finished prior to that?
So I made this record at last fall, so fall of 2019, so before the pandemic, and feel really grateful for that, because that means that I got to be in the studio with my band and my mm-hmm. producer and not be worried about anything except for making music that we cared about.
That's cool. Yeah, at least you got it done and it wasn't like the remote type thing, and you could actually like vibe with the people in your band and yeah, work with your producer. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's possible to make records right now, and some people are going into the studio mm-hmm. and some people are also making records remotely. I don't want to do that personally. Like, I'm scared of getting sick and scared mm-hmm. of getting other people sick. So I don't really want to go into a studio right now.
Sure.
And also, like, playing live in a room with people is something that brings me so much joy. I really don't want to have to do it the other way. Like, just selfishly, like, maybe it would still sound cool, but there's just something about the physical experience of playing music with other people, like in real time, that I just want to be able to do every time I make a record.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So have you been writing, or what, like during this process, were you able to write music? Or are you doing like live streaming things? I know you're doing some like giveaways and stuff. I love all the vinyl you have signed. I thought that's really rad.
Thank you.
Yeah. It looks like it's a beautiful record. So that's awesome. And you said and it looks like the vinyl is going to be gold. The actual record's going to be gold.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually awesome. Gold.
That's cool. That's very cool.
It's pretty sick. Yeah.
Is this the first album you've pressed on vinyl?
No, I pressed my second record on vinyl. My first record, we did not press on vinyl, 'cause I think that was still in the era where it was,
CDs like, were cool.
CDs were cooler, and I don't think that the vinyl resurgence had really kicked in yet. Like, when I put out my first record, Spotify was brand new.
Oh, weird. Okay.
So it really is like a new, it really was like another time in the music industry.
Sure.
But yeah, I have been writing. I'm somebody that tends to write a lot. And this period of my life, this year in the pandemic, I've felt like it's been a little bit more challenging, quite honestly.
Not just not inspired as much.
Well, I'm not having as many new experiences.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I'm not like interacting with people. So it that I think it's hard to feel like there's much to write about that's exciting other than just like talking about my bullshit. Like, I think I've talked about my bullshit enough that I just, I am writing, and there are songs that I've written this year that I would love to lay down at some point. But this chapter has been a lot about trying to put this record out for the first time as an independent artist, and it's a lot of work, to be honest. It's been taking up a lot of my brain. So I've kind of been at war with myself a little bit, like trying to allow this to be the era of putting out music and not making more music. And that's very foreign to me. Like, all I ever really want to be doing is making more music.
Sure. Is it so you're doing this all yourself? I mean, as an independent artist, that's probably exciting and challenging, I would think.
It is. I mean, I do have people on my team. I'm
Sure,
not
but not
I'm
a
not
labeled kind of.
yeah, I don't have so it is it's been incredibly challenging in numerous ways, but also really liberating in a lot of ways too. It's really cool to see what I can do. Like I feel like I'm really in this place now where I can't say that I'm not giving it everything I have. Like
Oh,
on
okay.
all the fronts, like I've always given it everything I've had, when it came to songwriting and performing. Like I've never felt like, oh, I haven't been tested in that realm. I've always kind of worked myself to the bone in that particular part of my job.
Sure.
But as far as like getting my business together and becoming a business, it's a weird way to talk about music, but it is what you kind of have to do if you want to do it professionally.
Right.
I have always felt like I probably could be dotting more I's and crossing more T's. And now I am, and I'm
Yeah.
exhausted.
For sure. Oh my goodness. I mean, it's such a different world now too with releasing music. I mean, people necess it's interesting for me because I feel like labels aren't just signing and trying to, maybe there are labels developing artists where now they can just go and see in real time, like, okay, I'm on your Spotify and you have a million plays. Okay, maybe I should reach out to this person and see what they have going on. It's like now they can look and find people and look at exactly what p others are, fans and like real time, like, oh, you have this many Twitter followers, or you have this many spins on whatever, Spotify. It's just so interesting to me. But now you don't really need the label as much, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of tools that are available to everybody now. It doesn't mean that it won't help to have a team of people who are dedicated to you and hopefully who know what they're doing. Definitely, labels are helpful for funding stuff. That's really helpful. And I think if you're in a situation with any kind of a team, whether it's a record label or a management company or just a team of ragtag go-getters who you put together yourself, which is what I've got going on,
Amazing.
any of those scenarios could be catastrophic or incredibly impressive, and it all has to do with synergy and passion and people who really, really like to work hard and know what they're doing. And it's really hard to find those people. And that's been one of the big lessons of the last, I don't know, 2 decades of my life. It's
Sure.
like finding your people is an ever-evolving journey, and it requires a lot. And when you do find those people, it's everything. I mean, when I found the producer of this record, I didn't have to worry anymore. Mm-hmm. I just, like, it was a missing piece, and it just clicked, and it became effortless. And that's eventually what you want in all of the sides, because really when you're doing what you love, you want to be able to tap into the love part as much as you can. Mm-hmm. Takes a lot of work to get to the, this is really fun and I feel like I'm gliding on clouds place.
Right. It's interesting you say that, because I'm sure a lot of people that aren't, you know, artists or whatever, they just assume that you just take 10 minutes to write some hit and you can just go out and have the time of your life. But it's like, no. You've been grinding at this for 20 years. It's crazy.
I mean, maybe there are people out there who do that, and that's so cool. And I'm very jealous of them.
I don't think there's many, to be honest.
Not anymore. I think maybe that was an era for sure, but this is a new era.
Definitely. Well, okay, with not having a label, you probably got to choose what song you wanted to lead as a single. You went with mm-hmm. Forgive Her. Why did you choose that song?
So Forgive Her was one of the singles. We've actually put out 5 singles.
Oh, so all these are going to make the record then.
They're all on the record,
Annie,
yeah.
Is that going to make...
Okay. Is on the record.
What
I Shouldn't
Jesus
Go Anywhere.
Do? I Shouldn't Go. Okay, so those
what
are all
Jesus
in the album.
Do? Graveyard Boyfriend, yep.
Okay, see, I thought it was just going to be the one. So tell me about Forgive Her.
Oh, so Forgive Her is one of the more intimate songs on the record. Mm-hmm. I think sonically it lives more in this kind of organic place. Like most of the record, not most, but a good amount of the record is really about like power. Okay. There's a lot of electric guitar. There's just a lot of like fun kind of joy and angst playing against each other, and mm-hmm. Forgive Her is, it feels like a more introspective moment. I mean, I wrote it for myself. I didn't even think I wanted to put it on the record. It's a tender moment about like mm-hmm. nurturing my inner child and learning how to have compassion for myself and compassion for people that hurt me. And like, it's really a meditation on learning how to sit with uncomfortable feelings and allow yourself to stay connected mm-hmm. to people, which is a hard thing to do if you're in pain. Like if you're in pain, it's really like the first thing that happens is you put up a wall of some kind, and it either shows up as anger or fear or some other weird convoluted mm-hmm. thing. And the minute that you do that, you kind of separate yourself from another person, and it becomes really hard to see that there are just two wounded children trying to be okay and hang out with each other.
Right.
Because really, we just want to be in connection. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, you think about like, what is it they say about addiction? Like, addiction is the symptom of being disconnected. Mm-hmm. And so Forgive Her is about trying to maintain connection in the face of discomfort.
I love that. Okay, that's awesome. I didn't realize those other songs are going to be on the album as well. That's awesome, because it does sound sonically different than the other ones. Are a little bit more upbeat. I mean, and you have like, I really like What Would Jesus Do? That's a great song.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I love the cover of Champagne Supernova you did.
Thank
you.
Are you
a big Oasis fan?
I can't say that I'm incredibly familiar with a lot of their catalog, but I grew up listening to that song with my brother. Well, I mean, I guess we're going back to my brother. So he was a huge Oasis fan. And when we were kids, he used to play that song for me when we would like hang out in his room. And I think maybe I was just missing my brother and wanted to sing something that reminded me of him.
It's a beautiful like version of it. I love it. So good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you for doing this as well, too. This has been great. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I have one more question for you before I let you go. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Ooh, I could write a book of advice for aspiring artists. I don't know if any of it would apply because I think the thing that I keep learning is like well, maybe this is the advice. Everybody's path is really different, and it's helpful to see how other people do it and to see like what works and what looks exciting to you or inspiring to you. But the more that you can get to know what makes you light up, and when you figure out what makes you light up, then the more you get to learn what makes you inherently special, the better off you are, the more clearly you can communicate who you are, and the more people you'll be able to move. And playing this game of trying to become someone else or trying to like have someone else's career is a tough path. And I just recommend trying to stay true to yourself. It's a cliche phrase, but I think it's really, really important in this industry because a lot of people will tell you that you need to do things a certain way or will make you feel like if you're not doing the thing that seems to be successful right now, that means that you're not good or that you're not going to make it. And that's just not true. It's just the people that can most clearly communicate their true selves, I think, are the ones